disrupt the proceedings. And with that, Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairs and members of the subcommittee. This is the budget for the Commission for the Blind. I distributed to your offices yesterday a packet of material, including a brief memo outlining some items, followed by the Legislative Fiscal Office analysis. The governor's total funds budget for this agency is 7.3% below the 2001-03 legislatively approved budget. The general fund portion of that is 3.5% below that same 2001-2003 level. The reduction of the general fund could impact the federal fund resources due to a relatively high match rate for federal funds. However, the agency is exploring the use of other funds to use for that federal match. There were no budget notes from last session. There was one audit report. We have a new director of the division, or the commission, and so the Secretary of State Audits Division conducted a change of director audit for the Commission for the Blind. No interim reports or studies were completed. No fee adjustments are proposed. The agency appeared before the emergency board twice during the interim for other fund limitation increases. And finally, the commission is under what is referred to as an order of selection prioritization process that's required by the federal government. That occurs when there are not enough funds to serve all those who are seeking, clients who are seeking services. So they do have a wait list, and it can be as long as 6 months.
Linda, is it? We're going to have Linda. Mm-hmm. Linda Mock and Stephanie Parrish and Jeremy Patton.
That is very weird.
Oh, it is.
Hi, Linda.
Hi.
That phone is to you, Madam Chair.
You know, we don't have Rosie up on the counter today.
I noticed.
Where is Rosie?
I forgot.
You forgot Rosie?
You want me to
Yes. Rosie, for those of you in the audience, is Rosie the pig, and she collects dollars, coins, anything that anyone would contribute when members of this panel or those who are testifying are using acronyms. And so the proceeds from Rosie at the end of the legislative session will be donated to the Oregon Food Bank. So on the one hand, we encourage the use so that Rosie can become very big and fat. And we will set Rosie up there. Now, Representative Westland, you can spew your alphabet soup if you'd like today. Go ahead, Linda.
Okay, thank you. Chair Winters and members of the committee, while I do want to contribute to the food bank, I'll try to do it in other ways than using acronyms today. So we'll try to be on good behavior. I'm sure you're aware that the mission of the Commission for the Blind is to assist eligible individuals who are blind to move into full inclusion in society through employment, independent living, and social self-sufficiency. And I have with me today the chair of our Commission for the Blind, Stephanie Parrish Taylor, and we are going to share in this presentation, and so I'm going to turn it over to Stephanie to begin with the goals of the agency.
I'm going to wait until...
Oh.
We need our very most important person who assists us with all of our recording. And if she's not there, then we don't get it all set. Are we ready? Okay. Now, Linda.
Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Stephanie at this point.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, my name is Stephanie Parrish Taylor, and I am the chair of the Commission for the Blind. Our goal at the commission is to provide a number of things. One is a continuum of services for youth, as a services for youth from transition to older blind. We provide vocational rehabilitation services to Oregonians who are legally blind, and an effort to increase employment, to increase income levels for these individuals. We also provide the skills training that enable blind Oregonians to remain independent in their homes and their communities. And when we do this for older Oregonians, our hope is to prevent institutionalization. And we also maintain a registry of all Oregonians who are legally blind. And we do this in a operating environment that is both demanding and complex. We have seen ongoing increases of the number of older blind who are eligible for our services, as well as actual clients who are coming in for services leading to employment. These are individuals who are asking for comprehensive services and are wanting a say in what those services are. The need for technology and the impact of technology on these individuals' lives is ever increasing, as is the cost. We are struggling with the Workforce Investment Act, which requires our partnership and one-stops across the state, though we are a small staff. And we're currently functioning in an uncertain legislative landscape due to the reauthorization of the Individual Disability Education Act, the Workforce Investment Act, and the Rehab Act. And finally, as you well know, we are struggling with the impact of the economy on both employment outcomes and funding for our services. As I indicated, I have the pleasure of being the chair of the commission. I am joined by six very capable Oregonians who include Dr. John Boyce, a retired physician from Southern Oregon, Charlene Cook, a successful small business owner in the Portland area, Frank Armstrong, who's a retired citizen from the coast who has been very active in senior issues, Ed Ripplinger, who operates a food service environment here in program here in the Salem area, Elizabeth Russo Rooney, who is from Southern Oregon as well and who works in early education, and Dr. Philip Stockstead from the Eugene area. Phil and I are the only sighted people at this point on the commission. We run a number of programs. Perhaps the most important of these is the Rehabilitation Services Program, and our hope there, our focus there, is to put people to work. We provide a number of services in support of reaching that outcome. Within that program, we run a program that I'm particularly proud of, and that's the Summer Work Experience Program that we refer to as SWEP. This is a program that's been nationally recognized for the work that we do with young people over the summer to increase their success in becoming employed adults. Kids who are able to complete that program have a 75% employment rate compared to the generally accepted 70 to 75% unemployment rate for individuals with disabilities. We work with older blind, and older blind are those individuals that we're all unfortunately getting closer to being who have trouble reading newsprint and who will need adaptive services to remain independent in their home. Through a very modest investment of primarily federal funds, because it's a 1090 match for those dollars, we're able to keep seniors out of more costly, more restrictive living environments in nursing homes.
How do you, Stephanie, how do you interface with the Senior and Disabled Services?
Last session there was some, I believe it was a budget note that we worked with them to secure some funding. We made some efforts during the last biennium to build some relationships with senior services that was, I don't believe, as successful as we would like. And I think Linda could provide additional details about that relationship as well.
I think we do have a good relationship with them throughout the state, where we refer individuals back and forth between the two agencies. And we have also provided training for their staff with our staff in the local areas on how to best provide services to individuals who are blind. We did not succeed, as we had hoped after last session, in coming up with a cooperative project that would be jointly funded to expand older blind services. But a lot of things happened in the last year that I think have been kind of unexpected. But Older American Act funds were not something that could be transferred to our agency, which was something we did explore. And we're currently looking at the concept of trying to actually have the agency become a Medicare provider so that we could use that source of funds to expand services to older blind. So we do have a cooperative working relationship, although it's not a formal financial relationship.
Your concentration is... And your population is citizens who are blind. And we listened, heard Voc Rehabilitation the other day, and they too have some components for the blind. Is there some overlap or duplication in what the two of you do?
Well, we do provide very similar services, Madam Chair and members of the committee. However, the populations actually do not overlap. They provide services to individuals that are visually impaired, and we provide services to individuals that are legally blind. And the definition of legal blindness is 20/200 or worse in the best eye after all possible correction, or 20 degrees or less. There are individuals that have visual impairments that are not that severe but yet still have some functional limitations, and those would be the individuals that the vocational rehabilitation services provide services to.
Continue.
I just wanted to give an example. Stephanie was describing our rehabilitation services and our orientation career center and the services and types of training that we offer of what it's like for an individual to move through that process. And I'm going to use an actual example, although I won't share the individual's name at this point. But we had a young man in July of 2001 who was about 30 years old who was involved in a climbing accident where he fell off of the mountain. And as a result of that injury, he became suddenly totally blind, lost all of his vision, and had some other head injuries as well. He did have a very speedy physical recovery, and our agency got involved in providing services to him within 2 months of the accident. And he needed extensive services because of the sudden loss of vision. So we really provided to him a full range of training on what we consider adaptive skills for a blind individual. He learned how to travel with a cane, how to use public transportation, since obviously he was no longer driving. He also learned how to read Braille and how to use adaptive technology. Prior to his accident, he had worked at Intel as a mechanical engineer and actually had a master's degree and was working toward his PhD, so he had a high level of education, had a good job. After the accident happened, he couldn't return to work, but we continued to work with him, provided him the training that he needed. He was able to learn the skills very quickly, and less than a year after the accident, he was able to return back to his employer at Intel. Intel worked closely with us on adapting his computer equipment on his job so that he could have access to it through voice output. And they also shared in the cost. We provided the technical expertise and sent staff out to do job site modification and analysis. And then Intel actually paid for a large portion of the adaptive equipment that was needed. And within less than a year of the accident, he was back to being a productive citizen, working on his own, traveling back and forth to work, and really a very great success story. In fact, he's gone on to be a mentor in working with some of the students that we currently have in training because he was so enthusiastic about the program. So that's just an example of the types of individuals we serve. I wanted to briefly mention we also have what is called a Business Enterprise Program, which is on page 12 if you're following in your booklet. And this is a result of the Randolph-Shepard Act. And this program has 27 individuals who work in various public buildings, including federal, state, and municipal buildings, and they provide food service and vending opportunities. This program, as a long-standing program, was actually created in 1937 for individuals who are blind to have precedence in operating these types of units. So We are the designated state agency that works with this program, and we provide training to individuals who are interested in going into the program, and then they actually run independent businesses and are really, in most regards, self-employed. We do provide technical assistance to them, and the contracts with the building are actually with the agency, and then we subcontract out to the individual. The next program that I would like to explain to you is our industries program. And this is a fairly unique program, I think, definitely for our agency and probably throughout the state agencies, because it's a cooperative program with Multnomah County. And it provides vocational and work activity for individuals who are blind, who are also developmentally disabled. It is 100% other funds, so none of the staff that are in that program are state employees. And it also provides community-based supported employment opportunities for individuals in the program.
The final program that we'd like to talk about is the Orientation and Career Center for the Blind. And this is where individuals learn those adaptive skills that they need to function independently now that they are blind. And they include adjustments to blindness, travel training, learning how to match your socks now that you can't see the color, how to know a can of green beans from a can of corn, how to cook. There are low vision assessments to help people who have some residual sight make the best use of that. There's Braille training, as well as the training required to access and utilize this ever-increasing array of technology that has just had a phenomenal impact for blind folks on what they can do and where they can do it, as well as looking at what are their career options now that they have lost their vision. I apologize in my zeal to get into the program. I skipped over our organizational chart, and I'll let Linda talk about that.
Okay. Basically, the organizational chart, we provided you with three of them so that we could clearly show you where we are and where the governor's recommended and where we would like to end up. On page 5, you see the organizational chart as we currently exist. With 49 and a third FTEs, and it shows our major programs being our administration, business enterprise, rehabilitation services, which includes both vocational rehabilitation and independent living services, our orientation and career center for the blind, which is a training center in Portland, and then the industries program that we just spoke to you about. The next organizational chart shows the organization minus 8 positions, essentially, that would be lost with the governor's balanced budget. And then on page 7, you see the organizational chart with 4 positions restored, which we would like to propose using other donated funds to restore some of the loss of general funds.
The commission realized that we would be confronted with working with the staff, making decisions about cuts, because we certainly were tracking the budget issues that you guys were dealing with. And in doing so, we came up with a set of principles to use in working with the staff and making those decisions. And they include identifying services that contribute most to the agency mission, looking at cost effectiveness and return on the investment, leveraging state funds to bring in federal dollars. And this is an area where our federal match, I think, puts us in a strong position. We enjoy a 9-to-1 match for our older blind program and a 4-to-1 match for our vocational rehabilitation program. And the final principle was to maintain the investment in special education. And this is realized in our summer work experience program, where youth are able to take what they have learned in those programs. We get them involved both in employment as well as a college exploration program that goes on to help them make that decision. And for the youngsters who are involved in that program, we have had very good outcomes as adults, and we've been able to track them longitudinally.
Okay. On page 16, you'll see the prioritized list of services that we were asked to provide, and we lump them together into the larger programs. Our top priority would be our vocational rehabilitation program, which, as you can see by the budget figures, is by far our largest program, and that includes the specialized job placement services, the teaching services we've spoken of, and the transition services. The next priority group would be the Older Blind Independent Living Rehabilitation Services Program, which deals with seniors over 55. The third would be our Business Enterprise Program, and the fourth would be our Industries Program, which, as I said, is a 100% other-funded county-level program. Next, I'd like to share with you our connection to the benchmarks. There are two benchmarks that we are linking our services to. The first one is the percentage of adults with lasting significant disabilities who are capable of working who are employed, which directly, as you can see, relates to our mission. The second one is number 14, which is the percentage of covered Oregon workers with earnings of 150% or more of the poverty level. And we have a number of performance measures which we have developed for the agency which tie into these benchmarks. We measure the number of individuals that we serve in our vocational rehabilitation program. We measure the number of individuals that are placed in employment, the percentage of those individuals who successfully complete the program, and their average earnings once they are placed into employment. We also look at the percentage of individuals that earn 150% or more of poverty level at closure. And then for our summer work experience program, we look at the number we served. We look at the number served in our orientation and career center, our older blind program, and then we look at the cost per client in the older blind program. On page 18, we delineate our performance on the two benchmarks over the last few years, and this first one is the percentage of workers above 150%. You can see we did have a drop as the economy suffered, and we have in 2002 begun to improve, and we're back up to 68%, with our goal being to reach 70%. Our rehabilitation rate, which is the percentage of the vocational rehabilitation clients who go to work at the end of their plan, we are currently at 71% for 2002 with a goal of 75%.
Linda, in looking at your benchmarks and the percentage of individuals earning more than above 150 at closure, things were going very well in 72, I mean in 97, 98, 99, and then began to drop in 2000, 2001, really dropped, and you're coming back up in 2002. Can you share with us some of the indicators that was going on and that caused some of these declines?
I think part of it is, of course, the state economy and the type of jobs, and so that has certainly been an effect. I think there's another effect that we sometimes have because we're a relatively small agency, and statistically, sometimes if you have, just happen to have a group of individuals who have lower wages, then it does affect your ability to perform on that. But we do really work at that issue, and in fact, this last year our average wage at closer was $12.42 per hour. So you can look, and we'll get into those wages a little more, but those are really the best theories that we have. It's a combination of the particular individuals that you have at one point in time, as well as the overall economy of
the state. Were there any management issues that were going on in 2001?
Well, actually, there was one that Stephanie just said to me that I think is definitely a factor I should mention, and that is the year we moved into order of selection. An order of selection is required when you don't have the resources available to serve all individuals that are eligible for your services. An order of selection is dictated by the Rehabilitation Services and the Rehab Act. And essentially it says that you must serve those individuals with the most severe disabilities first. And so you prioritize individuals. We have three categories based on the number of disabilities that they possess. And so when we moved into that, you do emphasize and serve first those individuals with the most severe, who are also those less likely to have higher earnings. So I think there's a definite relationship with that issue relative to our performance.
If you in your percentage of vocational rehab clients who went to work in 2000, it was 82.6%.
Right. So the earnings were lower was the issue that year. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The next graph that you have on page 19 shows you the number of individuals that we serve in the vocational rehabilitation. You can see that this number has been on a definite increase trend. We are projecting some decreases, but those are really based on lack of staff resources to be able to serve all the individuals. I believe that the number of individuals needing the services continues to grow. On page 20, we show you the percentage of individuals who were significantly disabled, and you can see that we have a high percentage of the folks that we serve, 99% essentially. And the average length of time that individuals are in service is about 2.5 years. Now, on page 21, we have a chart which gives you the trends on all of our performance measures kind of in a brief summary format. I don't think I probably need to go through those unless you have questions about them. Next, we included for you the links to the benchmarks and the final review from the Progress Board in their approval of our benchmarks. You can see that we do have two major benchmarks that are linked to two major goals, and that we have 8 performance measures that we use to determine our success. The Progress Board stated that we met all of the criteria that were spelled out in the guidelines and that we satisfied an advanced criteria by specializing on which organizational structure within our agency was responsible for each measure, so that they felt our performance measures were well-linked and well-stated and covered the scope of the agency well, and that there was a mixture of outcomes and outputs within the key measures, and we're well written and understood, and so basically they approved of our choice of performance measures. So then I'm going to ask Stephanie to talk about the state-to-state comparisons that we've included for your review.
We selected Washington, Idaho, and the combined program in California as the comparison states, and starting on page 24, you get a comparison of the hourly wage of competitive employment outcomes, and Oregon is second only to Washington at $11.20 for 2000 and 2001. For the percentage of disabled adults employed, we are first at almost 78%, and significantly higher than the comparison states and higher than the national average. Moving on to looking at those who had significant disabilities, we are again second to Washington State, but not by much, and again higher than the national average. I think importantly on page 27 we have, we look at the percentage of cost for the total administration of the program, and Oregon at almost 11% is significantly less than either Washington Blind or Idaho Blind. We have information about our average training costs as well as our technology cost. And then on page 28, we're looking at the cost of services to the older blind, a program that I talked about earlier. And again, with a very modest investment of $454, which is only beat by Washington State, we're able to keep seniors in their home and fairly independent, and thus avoiding higher costs in other programs.
Next, on page 29, we highlight some of the program evaluation activities that we participate in on a regular basis. We have annual case reviews that we conduct. We also conduct satisfaction surveys to find out how our clients feel that we are doing on provision of services. We just completed one that had a satisfaction rate up around 97%, so we have very positive results. We also use focus groups and public hearings to provide input to us. We have standards and indicators which have been established by the Rehabilitation Services Administration by which our program is measured on an annual basis. We also have annual reports on our program outcomes and progress towards goals, which we report to the governor and to our Region 10 Rehabilitation Services Administration. We also always have an annual review by the Rehabilitation Services Administration where they do case reviews as passed. each year. And I wanted to highlight, for example, that we had done an employment survey about a year ago, and we looked at individuals who had been close and successful employment five years ago in our program, and we wanted to see how many of them had maintained employment and whether or not they had medical benefits. And we found that 90% of the individuals that we surveyed had maintained their employment, and 86% were receiving medical benefits. Next, we have a staffing analysis, which just shows you the current vacancies that we have within the agency and what we would like to do with those in the future. You can see we currently have 7 vacancies, which have been mostly from retirements within our agency. And for 4 of them, we have reassigned and restructured duties, looking to reduce the number of FTE within our budget, and 3 of them are positions that we would like to rehire after July 1st. We also have, for your information, this staffing analysis, which shows our management-to-staff ratio, which is for the administrative services is 1 to 4, rehabilitation services is 1 to 12, orientation and career center is about 1 to 12, and the BE program, which only has 2 individuals, is 1 to 1, but they also have oversight of 27 licensed blind business managers throughout the state. On page 32, we outline for you the cost factors that have been driving factors for our agency. Stephanie has already mentioned perhaps the number one issue, which is the increasing need for the cost of technology to assist in employment for people who are blind and visually impaired. Technology has been a double-edged sword for us because it has opened many kinds of employment, and it's very positive in the access that it gives us to various types of jobs for individuals who are blind. But at the same time, it requires a substantial amount of training of technology that we use in training, and also technology for those individuals on the job. So it is a cost factor for us. And also, we have an aging population in Oregon, which is increasing the number of individuals who are needing our services in order to remain independent in our homes, and that is our older blind program. We particularly see incidence of macular degeneration in that population, which is very significant. And we also have some increased rent factors that we are having to deal with. We have taken a number of measures to control our costs over the past biennium. The first one we already spoke of, we have invoked an order of selection, which means we have created wait lists that are prioritized based on the significance of the individual's disability. And we only open new cases as the funds allow. So our counselors are projecting out on an annual basis what they believe the cases that we have open are going to cost, and then open new ones as funds make that available. In that process, the counselors have worked hard to maximize use of comparable benefits so that we're looking at other resources and partnering wherever possible. As in my example, Antel was paying for a lot of the adaptive equipment on the job. Those kinds of things make a big difference. We also have an increased investment of employers in reasonable accommodation. We encourage clients to participate in costs where feasible, and we have developed some web-based instruction to minimize travel needs, and we are using peer mentors for providing technical assistance on adaptive technology throughout the state, and we are always on the lookout for grants and applying for grant resources wherever they might be available. We coordinate with related programs and other agencies. We have cooperative agreements with education, the Department of Human Services, Vocational Rehabilitation Services, and senior and people with disabilities, as well as several other public and private, and that way we can all maximize.
Madam Chair.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In your partnerships, have you reached out to the small business development centers to see what assistance they could provide in providing educational opportunities to small business owners as it relates to trying to increase employment activities and increase, I think one of the other goals was the level of income earned?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair and Representative Smith, we have, and we do in fact work with the Small Business Administration and their small business centers to try to encourage individuals who are interested in self-employment. We have used that resource. We haven't, I don't think, gotten a lot of funding from them directly for the individuals that are going into self-employment, but more have used the technical assistance and advice that they offer through that program.
Just a follow-up comment. In my other world, my business works with the small business development centers, and One of the things I think would be a tremendous opportunity is for the centers to come and work with you folks to provide perhaps an educational class for small business owners to attend to learn about the many opportunities available to them in terms of making these type of partnerships. And I'd love to try and work with you on that.
Well, thank you, Representative Smith. That's a good offer. Thank you. You also see on the next page our administrative costs, which are...
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we could maybe go back and look at your census, and it's down because your capacity is down, my question would be how many persons are denied the opportunity for assistance, and if you keep that number, if you keep track of that number.
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, we don't actually deny individual services because of the lack of resources. What we do is we put them on a wait list. And we have managed to reduce the time of that wait list over the past year. We were at about 6 months. I think we're at about 3 months now. So, and what we have found, unlike some agencies, find that when they put individuals on a wait list, they tend to disappear and go somewhere else to get services. That doesn't seem to be happening with our population. We do find that when we have the resources available and go back to provide the services, we do find that they are waiting for the services, probably because we're such a unique source of training and rehabilitation that they don't really have another resource that they can go to that would replace our services. Mm-hmm. So it really is a time delay that we're creating.
Follow-up. Thank you. The other question I have is with respect to apparently you have investigated some kinds of means testing for services. I wondered if you could elaborate on that.
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator Morris, we do not have a means test for services within our program. There are a few services under the Rehabilitation Services Act that you essentially have a means test, and that is, for example, if an individual is going for higher education, they're required to apply for Pell and get grant opportunities. Now, it is possible for a vocational rehabilitation agency to have a means test. However, we have not implemented that because if you look at the statistics on the individuals that we serve, the vast majority of them are individuals who are eligible for SSI or SSDI, and hence, if we did put in a means test, most of them would pass that means test, and we really wouldn't be eliminating very many individuals.
And technology, which is a significant cost for us, is exempt from a means test under the federal law.
Thank you.
Okay.
I guess I made an editorial comment, and I just want to say, Linda, that your presentation is going very well. Your information inside is very well organized, and I want to thank you.
Thank you.
And we were just commenting on looking at your experience from 97, 99, 99, 01, 02, 01, 03, and there is appreciably little or no change in your administrative percentage as well as your program cost, and that's commendable.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Senator Shields.
This is a little bit off track, but about three or four times in the last 15 or 20 minutes you've referred to technology and adaptive technology and so on. Is there much ability to recycle the technology that you have, or does everybody have to purchase new stuff? How much savings is there in use and reuse of the technology that you get your hands on?
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, that's a good question, and I think we're probably all aware of the way technology changes. And so on some types of technology, there's not a lot of recycling because the technology changes and you need new technology to adapt to the new technology. Because one thing that we're faced with is the technology we're dealing with is access technology to either take computer information and transform it into large print or braille or a voice output. And as softwares change and, you know, computers are constantly changing, you have to upgrade that technology as well to keep up with it. So on that type of technology, we are not able to do a lot of recycling. However, another kind of technology that we use, which is low vision aids, we have a lot of individuals who have usable vision, and they might use something we call a closed circuit television, which is essentially a zoom camera that enlarges print to maybe up to 3 inches in height. Those types of equipment we are able to recycle, and sometimes we'll find an individual may have a progressive condition, can use that type of equipment for a period of time, and then can no longer use it and will return it. So we do try to track that type of equipment and reuse it whenever possible.
One of the things the commission does is it has sort of a lending library of technology because it all looks good in the catalog. And people will get it and they don't necessarily use it. And so instead of making an investment that you're kind of stuck with, we let people use that equipment, make sure it's something that's going to work for them before a purchase would be made.
Okay. Continuing on with our presentation, on page 34, you see our affirmative action summary report. This is for agency staff. 62% of our staff are women, 8% are people of color, and 63% are people with disabilities. We have a number of accomplishments which we have been proud of over the last biennium. We have particularly been proud of the fact that we've increased the average wage at closure to $12.42 per hour. And if you look at the type of occupations, which I have in the program detail, which I don't need to go into now unless you're interested, you'll see that we have a high percentage of individuals going into professional occupations. We have secured grant resources for purchasing client technology because, as I said, we're constantly needing more resources in that area. We have provided technical assistance to the one-stops on accessibility and had a grant to help provide access equipment and train peer mentors throughout the state. We expanded our efforts with the Medford Technology Center with a cooperative agreement with Southern Oregon Goodwill and the local one-stops. We have reduced our wait list for services, and we have reduced the cost of services per individual overall through the use of comparable benefits.
Over the years, I've come to think of the commission as an economic development program and the cloak of a social service program, because when you look at the benefit of this program, it has tremendous economic impact. The state investment in our average client gets paid back and taxes that they pay as an employee in about 8.5 months. The federal contribution gets paid back in about 20 months. And for those individuals who are able to exit the Oregon Health Plan, there's a lifetime savings of slightly more than $250,000. For the older blind, which is a program that we've talked about, for our roughly $454 investment, and 90% of that is federal funding, we are able to potentially defer approximately $41,000 in nursing home care for each of those individuals. I think that we can safely say that we are a very cost-effective program. We need to talk about the governor's recommended budget and to talk about a package 101 to cover a rent increase for the agency. Several years ago, as a consequence of an audit, we, the commission members, were urged to have more fiscal oversight in the agency's business. Last biennium, we were compelled to exercise that fiscal oversight when we were confronted with a 60% increase in our rent. We wanted to know why. We wanted every penny of that accounted for by the Department of Administrative Services. We also wanted to know why we got notice of that rent increase after we had presented our budget to you, secured approval, and the session had gone home for the first time. Because basically, after we had finalized our budget, we were told about this significant increase for the coming biennium that if we were to have paid would have resulted in a significant reduction in services to clients, because that's the only way it would have been paid. We did meet with DOS. We explained to them that this is after the fact. We've put our budget to bed. We can't come up with a 60% increase in our budget. We left the table thinking that that was a settled issue. We understood full and well that we should expect an increase for the 03-05 biennium. And we continue to pursue this issue because the suggested increase was something we felt that we couldn't afford in 03-05 any better than we could afford it in 01-03. The commission directed the staff to gather more information, and when they were met with a lack of response from DOS, I wrote a letter requesting a meeting to get an explanation of this. This meeting turned out to be more than a bit of a shock. First, we learned that, in fact, the agreement we thought that we had made for 01-03 was not a done deed, that they wanted an additional $130,000 from us to settle up the 01-03 budget, and that the budget numbers that we were given for the 03-05 rent that we had built into the package were wrong, that there were an additional need for approximately $21,000 over the 03-05 biennium to come up to the budget level they were projecting. And even that was a problem. It was a projected budget. We would not actually know our final rent costs until the close of 03-05. It wasn't, you know, you can expect a 3-5% wiggle room. It was, when we close our books, we'll tell you what you owe. And we had no way of knowing or controlling or planning for that potential difference or additional charge.
Stephanie, did you move?
Pardon?
What changed in your space needs that would?
Well, that was actually a problem because part of the issue was we were being, when as they figured our square footage, they included the sidewalks and some covered parking. We have not moved. The building has simply gotten another 2 years older.
So
this is Dan.
This is Dan.
Right.
And so now they're charging you for sidewalks.
No, we were able to work with that.
Okay.
But we've had numbers that shift. We've had inaccurate numbers. We've not gotten, you know, good answers to our questions, and we did meet with DOS approximately 2 weeks ago, and the numbers have changed since that meeting. We asked why they budgeted a 5% increase for our rent when we were instructed to budget at 3.5%. And probably the most concerning thing to me, had I not pressed for this meeting, we would not have known that there was additional monies to be owed for the 03-05 budget until we would have had a final budget.
I guess it's...
So not only do we need the money we're asking for, we might need more money.
Representative Smith, and then I'll get to...
Probably everybody in this panel has a question.
I think we all have a question about this particular issue. What I would like to ask, though, of our staff, because I think we all really do have a question, if you can get some answers from DAS. One is what occurred and why you saw a 60.24 increase, and if you don't have expanded space utilization, what occurred in all of this, unless you can shed some light on this for us, Mr. Olson. I think this panel here has some very serious, as well as I know that the Blind Commission does, concerns.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, this issue was brought to my attention a few weeks ago, and we have had discussions with the commission, and I have had discussions with the LFO staff who is assigned to the Department of Administrative Services. We have sent emails to DAS. We have gotten into the middle of this issue, and essentially what I've told the Department of Administrative Services is, number one, there's no general fund money for this purpose, and number two, I'm quite confident that if this issue came back to the emergency board, that DAS would be called in front of that committee and asked to explain, and might be sufficiently embarrassed to to do that. So we are working on it, and as more information becomes available and as we get responses from DAS, I'll share it with the committee.
Thank you.
I'm sure. Go ahead.
Senator, I think it's Shields.
Well, you've kind of done the question thing. The point is that this, when you've been around a while, this pattern seems to continue. I mean, it's here and there over the years that DAS has become the agency everybody loves to hate for this kind of reason. I mean, it's, and so I just wanted to express that concern because this is not the first time we've seen something like this.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious as to what the market rate is for sidewalk rental.
This is why, the same as office space, no doubt.
Representative T. Smith.
Are you currently renting space from a state building? Are you in a state building?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. An existing state building has been there for a while. Well, I just think this whole thing is unconscionable. I would love to be able to talk to the person who made this decision, have him come before us right now and justify it. Or she, I don't care. Whatever.
Yeah. I just wanted to make this gentleman.
Yeah, I do. You know, the Commission of the Blind, of all things, sounds like to me they're trying to protect their own selves from any type of budget cut that they are looking at down the future, and they want to do it on the backs of any agency, the agency they can pick on, and I just think that's so wrong.
Well, I would say that if 60% jumps out at everyone, so Senator Gordon.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I would like to know, because the Commission for Blind is located in a state facility, if this type of rent increase is being seen in other budgets, other state agency budgets, if there's a pattern, I'd like to know about that, and I'd like to know what's behind this, well, if we can call it a practice. Would like to understand that.
Well, I think that not unless DAS would like to have a comment.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jeremy Patton with the Department of Administrative Services. What's happened in the past is the Blind Commission has had a subsidy for their rent, and they have paid at a lower cost. Since they are currently in a DAS-owned building, uniform rent for most agencies is $1.30 per square foot, and there was some talk about moving them up to $1.30 per square foot, which would have been a lot more increase than this is currently. At the current rate, I believe they're paying about 60 cents per square foot. So as far as looking at other agencies, they do have a smaller increase in rent, and they are at a self-supporting rent currently. So
I just have one quick follow-up. Pat, you made the statement.
Let me recognize this. Representative Smith.
Okay. Mr. Patton, you made the statement it was a DAS-owned building. I disagree with that. That building's owned by the taxpayers of the state of Oregon. Now, if DAS has the attitude that they own the buildings and they can charge whatever rent they think they can, I think they are sorely mistaken, and you need to take that message back to your boss or whomever is doing this type of business. All right?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me kind of put some of this in perspective.
I did. I put it in perspective.
No.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Olson will take the message back and work with DAS to try to get some reasonableness out of this rent issue.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. If you go back to a little bit more about the governor's recommended budget, you'll see that we will have a reduction of $196,000 in general fund from our current service level, which would result in approximately $612,000 loss of federal funds that would not be able to come into Oregon. It also would affect our maintenance of effort within the rehabilitation services. If you don't maintain your current level of match rate, you are penalized in the future on a dollar-for-dollar basis on 2 years out, kind of an average. So that would be an effect. And our federal match rate, I think we've mentioned it for you already, really, is almost 5-1 for the vocational rehabilitation program and 9-1 for the older blind program. And the governor's recommended budget would decrease our staff by 8 FTEs, which would be about a 16% decrease. The impact on our operation would be in the areas of personnel and services for clients. We would have reductions in our vocational rehabilitation counselors and teaching positions and some support staff, and wouldn't have sufficient staffing resources to serve all of the eligible clients in Oregon. We feel that this would create longer wait lists for pre-vocational services in our training program. Older blind individuals would have limited access to independent living services, and there would be limited access to specialized services such as career counseling. We feel that we would probably be able to serve 245 less individuals per year, which is about 15% of our total caseload. So I guess I'll let Stephanie come up with our proposed solution.
What we're asking for is limitation to use other funds, and specifically to dip into the principle of our donation fund. In the past, we've had a practice of using the interest typically to fund innovative programming, things that perhaps or that were clearly not fundable by state or federal dollars. Probably one of the most exciting things in recent years that we've done with our donations fund is that we were able to help defray costs to get a number of our consumers involved in the Dragon Boat Racing in Portland. They are the first and only blind Dragon Boat team in the country. We used some the commission voted to use some donation funds to give them a leg up. They did a lot of fundraising on their own to help defray the additional cost of this activity. And I wish that you could have seen the meeting where they came forward and as individuals talked about the impact of this activity on their lives. There was one woman who really, you know, had lost hope. She had been a sighted adult who had lost her vision and really didn't have any real sense that there was life after blindness, and I think she was probably cajoled and pushed into participating in this activity. And she was a totally different person after the end of it. She was able to go out and be involved in a very normal activity, to be competitive. She really, in a very real, tangible way, understood that even though she was blind, she could do many things that a sighted person could do. We've gotten wonderful press on this activity. There's been national and international coverage of this team, and they did remarkably well in their first year out on the river. And they were invited to compete in San Francisco as well as in Vancouver. They are already back out on the river practicing for the new season. And this is one of the ways that we use that money, which is gifts that are given to us by private citizens. Some of them we have served and some we haven't.
It was Tiffany, how much is in that fund?
Linda? We currently have about $800,000 in that fund. And if you look at page 43, which is really the last page that we were going to talk to you about today, it shows you the use that we have made of donations fund prior to the 9901 biennium. Actually, it was never included as a part of our budget, and it was used for the type of things that Stephanie just described, for additional activities beyond what the state-federal partnership offers. We did, in 9901, use about $71,000 as match within our vocational rehabilitation program, and then in the current biennium, we are using $66,000. We estimated this to be the level of interest that would be available on the account, and that was the principle that the commission board was using, was to utilize interest and not go into the principal. But you can see that we are proposing this time an amount of about $143,000. We arrived at that amount by looking at what would be needed after the general fund cuts to bring in all of the federal funds that are available to blind Oregonians for rehabilitation services, and that is how we came up with that amount. And I know that, and Stephanie can probably elaborate on this as the chair of the commission, but the commission had a lot of very serious deliberations about the fact of going into the principal, but we felt that if there ever was a rainy day, this is one, and we didn't want to be hurting services when we had funds available that we could use to help bring in that federal match. And so I wanted to offer that as a potential solution. It does bring us back up not all the way back up for the loss of general funds, but partway there.
Thank you.
And I will say that this was a very difficult discussion for the commission. We don't see this as a sustainable solution to the funding of the commission. We recognize the seriousness of the budget challenge confronting the state. We want it to be a part of the solution and not expand the problem. But I have to say, I don't know that we can come back, you know, next biennium and do the same thing, because I anticipate that we'll need to go back to donations over the next 2 years because we've had to do it the last 2 years.
Well, first of all, I just want to put on the record a thank you, because I, you know, and one of the messages that I gave earlier was that I was looking for the agencies to come forward to help us with solutions. That this is probably one of the toughest budget climates that in my history of being in this building that we've ever been in. And two things, you know, you came to the table, and I want to thank you very, very much of looking at solutions of how we can get through the crisis, but recognizing, as my former boss, Governor Vicentia, says, that make sure you keep the structure in place, because when things get better, we can build on it. So I just want to put that on record to thank you and the members of the commission for thoroughly looking at your budget and looking at where you are and taking that step of saying that we want to make sure that we keep the framework and the services in place. So I really commend you.
Thank you.
Jeremy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, for the record, Jeremy Pan with the Department of Administrative Services. I will be going over the governor's budget, which should be a little handout on the desk in front of you. If you go ahead and turn to page 2, this is just an historical overview of the commission's budget. As you can see, general fund is a decrease of about 3.5% over the legislatively approved budget through the fifth special session. This is a direct impact on the 3.2% decrease in federal funds. There's also a 21% decrease in other funds, and this is due mostly to phase-outs of funds awarded during emergency boards over the interim that were not used. As you can also see, there is a reduction in the positions and the full-time equivalency related to those reductions. Page 3 shows the fund types for the commission. As you can see, the commission is mostly federally funded. Federal funds are a match to general fund of about 21.3% general fund to 78.7% federal funds, except for the older blind program, which the commission talked about, which is a 9-to-1 match. If you go ahead and turn to page 4, the governor's balanced budget carries forward reductions made during the 2002 fifth special session of the legislature. In order to come under these reductions, the commission had to eliminate 7 positions and reduce 2 other positions to half-time. They also reduce the available funds that assist clients with obtaining employment. The governor's budget also includes funds for the increased rent costs. Page 5 shows a breakout of the program units. As you can see, the commission consists mostly of rehab services. Page 6 is a breakout of the budget categories. As far as personal services, it's about 46%, services and supplies 31%, and the special payments piece is the monies for the funding for client services. Page 7, this is a list of the actions that were taken during the interim. At the September 2001 emergency board, the commission came in and was awarded $300,000 other funds limitation for contracts to expand the industries for the blind program. These funds were immediately unscheduled pending signing of the contracts. No contracts were ever signed, so the funds are phased out in the governor's balanced budget. In November 2001, the commission returned to the emergency board to establish 4 limited duration positions to expand the older blind program. As the commission did talk about earlier, they were working with the area agencies on aging and the Department of Human Services. No agreement there was met either, so the funds are again phased out in the governor's budget. The second special session included a reduction of $52,190 general fund. This was offset with an increase in other funds expenditure limitation. The third special session included the compensation plan adjustments across all fund types and a general fund reduction of $34,172. in the fifth special session had unspecified reductions of another $46,277. As far as building the governor's balanced budget, on page 8, central package 010 includes a vacancy savings adjustment and standard inflation for unemployment assessments. Package 020 is a phase out of the funds related to the expansion of the industries program and the older blind programs, which were mentioned from the e-board requests. Package 030 contains the state government service charges and the inflation adjustment amounts. Page 9 is the policy packages. Package 091 is the reductions from the fifth special session carried forward into next biennium. This is the 7 positions and the reduction in the 2 positions, as well as the reduction in the special payments. Package 101 is the increased rent costs due to the agency's building being scheduled as a self-supporting rent building. The commission would maintain its existing location. As far as fee and revenue changes, there were some changes in the revenue projections to try and true up some costs. As far as when we were looking at other funds to try and compensate for general fund loss, we started looking at other funds pretty carefully in donations accounts, so there was some minor adjustments there. And the donations and interest revenues were put onto the budget system as asked by you guys in 1999. There were no technical adjustments.
And there were no budget notes. And thank you. Thank you very much. And at this time, I will open it up for public testimony if there's no questions of Jeremy, Stephanie, or Linda. Senator Gordley.
There's a very beautiful young lady sitting on the front row, and I'm sure she's smart too.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that she may be a future senator.
Yeah. She's just smiling too. Mm-hmm. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, thank you. What are the fund balances of the commission for the, what would you call, public funds and donated funds? There must be 2 accounts.
As far as donations concerned, I think the latest figures I received was about $866,000 is in donations. That's also included in the other fund's ending balance, which we project from next biennium. So I think there's another $300,000 in other funds that are still available after the expenditures from next biennium.
It's about
1.1 ending balance. And actually, now that I think about it, the in orbits, which is how we keep track of the budget system, I believe the number for donations is only about 600,000, so there is some extra other funds in there in different program units. But those other funds are same business enterprises. Some of them are restricted for certain uses, so they wouldn't be able to be spread across and to offset a lot of the general fund. So
within the 800,000 or 900,000, there are some restricted funds inside of that.
Correct. Okay.
Thank you. Jeff Dunn and Jeff Lee. You can come up and they can have you sit at the desk if someone can. There will help you, show you where. Okay. There we go. Good. And if you will, we have 2 Jeffs. Jeff Dunn, if you will begin and state your name for the record.
Speaking, there you go. Okay. My name is Jeff Dunn. I've been blind for about, since 2000, May 2000. And the Commission for the Blind, when I first lost my sight, they came down when a phone call was made that I needed assistance. And somebody came down and they evaluated me and offered their assistance to help, showed me how to use a cane a little bit and started with my mobility instruction. And in the beginning, I stayed at a, I was put into a adult foster home because I was unable to care for myself, cook or clean or anything. I didn't have any skills, and so I started there. And then for a few months was there, and ended up going, after a while, went to an assisted living apartment building so I could have a little more freedom and take care of myself a little more, and continued my mobility skills a little bit to get around outside and more. And I have two daughters, in the ages of 6 and 8, and I wanted custody. Well, actually was offered, I have custody of them 3 days a week, but I was unable to keep them with me in the assisted living apartment building also, because it was a studio. And so then I was given the opportunity to go to Portland to the Commission for the Blind for a couple of months and take some training, and I learned how to use the computer keyboarding and the adaptive software. And I also learned more mobility skills and using the bus and crossing streets at streetlights and different things, and learned how to cook for myself and do my own laundry and different things. And after that, I was able, once I graduated, or not graduated, but finished the, what I was doing up there, I came back and was able, now I have my own place, and I'm able to take care of myself and my two daughters for 3 days a week. Every Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I have custody of my daughters, and they stay with me, and I'm able to cook and clean and take care of them and do things that, you know, just be a regular family. So it's been quite a benefit to me. They just helped me a lot. Now my goal is I'm working on my mobility skills some more to get a guide dog, hopefully, in the near future. I guess that's all I want to say, is just how much of a benefit they've been to me and how much it's brought me from being unable to do anything pretty much. Now I'm independent.
So thank you for overcoming the challenges.
Thank you.
You worked hard, too.
Thank you.
Jeff Lee?
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, I'd just like to talk about three different programs from the commission that I'm involved in or was involved with. First, I'd like to start with the SWEP, which is Summer Work Experience Program, as Stephanie said. I was involved with SWEP for 3 years. I went into SWEP not really knowing anything except for minor daily living skills. I was presented with the challenge of cooking for myself and doing my own laundry while being employed for three summers. I did go participate in this program, and it's kind of given me some career-oriented goals. I have decided that I want to go to college now and become a lawyer. So I think my last job, which was with the Oregon State Bar, helped me decide that. Also, I was involved with the Career Orientation Center, where I learned the adaptive technologies that are presented. I elaborated on my cooking skills. It was a very positive experience for me. I did receive O&M training, orientation mobility training, which is street crossings, pretty much the general overall learning about Portland and just being mobile. I also took woodshop classes that were offered in the Career Center, and that gave me something kind of as a hobby that is enjoyable to me. The third thing I'm involved with is I am an open case member of Free Vocational Habilitation and Training. My counselor is helping me out with some assistive technology for college. I'm going to be starting college here soon, in fact, March 31st, and be taking 9 credit hours and also be looking for employment. Basically, the main reason I came today was to thank the commission for their support and tell about my positive experiences. I don't think that without SWEP, I don't think that I would have been as successful as I am today. Without the Career and Orientation Center, I don't know if I would have had as much guidance in assistive technologies and overall daily living skills. And I just appreciate the vocational rehabilitation training, because I'm not totally self-supported yet, but I'm working on that. And I just appreciate everything the commission has done. been a real positive experience for me.
Jeff, if you decide, please, Jeff, if you decide that you want to become a politician rather than an attorney, let one of us up here on this panel know about it.
Absolutely.
But be warned, the money isn't as good.
Okay? Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. Are we, we leave now?
Yes. And Kay Madeira and
Madam Chair, did you notice the Oregon State University T-shirt?
No, how did I miss that?
I don't know.
Maybe it's your eyesight.
Well, yeah, that could be, too. It's all this small print. One of the things I would encourage, if the individuals who are listening, are looking at us, that one of the programs that was talked about was assisting individuals when you become chronologically advantaged and your eyesight begins to dim somewhat. You know, I'm in that category, that maybe they would like to, print things a little larger, a little more bolder, so that we don't have to strain so much to see. I see all those heads out there nodding. I'm not the only one that's chronologically advantaged and out here, But it would be very helpful. I think sometimes we forget about that we, tend to make everything a little small, and the vision does require sometimes that we see things have a little bolder print. I know for me that helps. Welcome, Kay.
Thank you. Check out where your mic's at.
It's right in front of you.
It's hiding from me, I think.
Straight ahead.
There we go.
Okay. Jeremy, you want to help her right there?
I just don't want to have to yell.
Don't want to.
Okay, thank you. My name is Kay Madeira, and it's been a long time since I've come down to the Capitol, and I feel like I have a unique position in that I have seen the commission's functions inside out as a client, which I am right now, and as a former commissioner, and as a member of a consumer group. I've also had the privilege of watching our legislative process at work, and I'm still a believer that the United States and the state of Oregon are the best places that one could live and have an opportunity to share our concerns with you as fellow Americans and as members of the Legislative Ways and Means Committees. The reason I'm here today is not because I want to represent a consumer group or necessarily as a former commissioner, but as a person who was a client who has discovered within the last 2 years the monumental challenges of trying to find employment. I am amazed every day at the economic challenges that are facing Oregonians. I remember a job that I applied for where over 400 individuals applied for the same job, and 44 of those individuals, and I was one of those, was considered for an interview, and eventually 12 individuals were hired, and I wasn't. But it just brought home to me the fact that we live in troubled times, and we live in times where I'm not the only one out here looking for a job. And the Commission for the Blind especially has been very helpful in working with me and another organization to try to find employment in the customer service field. And that field, customer service is a big buzzword nowadays, and that could cover working at McDonald's to working with the Internal Revenue Service or other places using the telephone as an informational resource. What I'm here to say is I appreciate the fact that the Commission for the Blind is helping, assisting me and directing me in the wonderful opportunity to find a job. And I'm hoping that should I come back in 2 years or in the next legislative session, I can say to you that I'm one of those success stories where the commission could close my case because I was a taxpayer living in this state. And I am a taxpayer and want to be again. I look forward to being able to work. And the Commission for the Blind, with the assistance of my counselor, with the assistance of the adaptive technology, is going to help me continue to realize that dream, and hopefully I can be one of those individuals who is not considered one of the in the unemployment, because blind the usual rehabilitation experience for blind folks is that jobs are very difficult to find, and I'm hoping, I know that with perseverance and continued effort and with the directions and assistance of the commission, I can make this another reality for me. So I thank you for the opportunity to let me just talk to you as a consumer, as a person, not just a former commissioner or a member of a consumer group, but somebody who's saying I'm looking forward very much to being able to be a taxpayer, paying her way and my guide dog's way in this great state that we have. So thank you for the opportunity, and I promise not to rattle on now.
Thank you, Kay, for sharing with us. And what is your friend's name?
His name is Idaho.
Oh.
And he did not come from Idaho. He was just named that. He came from Morristown, New Jersey. And so I say that he has an Eastern bark, and he lives in Oregon, and he's the same color as an Idaho russet potato.
Okay. Nathan? And Nathan, would you share with me your last name?
Holmes.
Holmes? And then I have a Van Frank Carlson. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Bear with me, I've never done this before. I just wanted to come here today to voice my opinion on the commission and all the people that run the commission, the instructors there, and all the other students. I have an eye disease called RP, which is progressive. I've been, for the most part, blind since 7 years old, and I've never been able to drive or have a quote-unquote 9-to-5 job, which has been hard, you know, financially, trying to you know, do odd jobs, which I am a mechanic, which a lot of folks don't really know how I can do that, but it's kind of one of those things that I taught myself with my disability to do, and I feel I do well, and the commission has enabled me to realize that if I do lose all of my vision, I'll still be able to, you know, hopefully do what I enjoy doing to support myself and my family, my wife, and my son. And I just wanted to say that I'm so grateful to organizations like the commission that lets us be human beings and still have our dignity, otherwise we may not have had. Thank you.
Thank you. Someone want to help? Van Frank, and we're going to Scarborough. Donna, you want a sister?
That's so pretty. I love your hat.
Okay, got it. Yes. I'm all right. I got it now. Yeah, thank you.
And I couldn't quite make out your first name.
It's Gwyneth.
Gwyneth
Van Frank Carlson.
From Eugene?
That's right.
Okay, Glenna.
So, Chairperson Winters, excuse me. I am here to talk in support of the commission. They are an absolutely fabulous agency with a wonderful staff that I have known and worked with as both a client and then a colleague, and over 25 years now. When I first came to Oregon, I was visually impaired, and I went to training to learn travel skills, cane travel skills. I had to learn under blindfolds because my vision loss was progressive as well. And so I learned all the other things that people have described, cooking, mobility, wood shop work. That was the most fun when I was handed a blindfold and put my hand on the radial arm saw and was given a raw log right out of the forest and told, make something. It was quite a challenge. And, you know, the joiner planer and the bandsaw and the table saw and all of those tools, it was very challenging. And the purpose of that work is for people to get over their psychological difficulties with being blind. And since we had to do it under blindfolds, we really were challenged because you really wanted to just rip it off. But we had a lot of support from our fellow students and our instructors. And once we graduated from that program, I went on to career training. And now I'm, I've learned a lot of technology. The commission has been very helpful. And I was going to address one of the things you said, Representative Smith, about recycling technology. This little gadget here is like a Palm Pilot. It's called a Braille and Speak. It belonged to another client of the commission who decided that she didn't like it, which I cannot imagine. And I was able to use it and have depended on it very much ever since. So now I'm a regular working tax-paying person. I have a job as the office manager of a construction company. My job duties include writing contracts and invoices, assembling crew and doing payroll, and material lists and et cetera. And I've actually even worked on the job site a few times, lifting and carrying and not using a skill saw because it's not a stable item. But I decided I didn't like that part of the work, so I went back to the office. I also want to address your, Representative Smith, the comment you made about small business. I have spent a number of years taking small business classes in partnership with the commission doesn't pay for those things. They've been very good about requiring that people put in what they can of their own means. And so I've taken a lot of small business classes in Eugene at the LCC Downtown Center. And developing my own business, Catalyst Works, as a disability consultant and educational entertainer. I'm a dancer and a performer, and I've done a lot of conferences and banquets and school assemblies, etc. My children, one of whom is 13 and the other is almost 8, have to have some explanation for their mother, so I go in and do assemblies, and that helps. So over the years, I've lost all of my vision. I've been total for about 20 years, almost 20 years. And I wanted to say something that I think is really important to understand about the commission and why it is different and separate from the voc rehab department. There are so many different kinds of disabilities that a caseworker has to work with in the VR department, and there are special needs for each disability type, much less each individual person with a disability. And because blind people are only 2% of the population, we tend to be the smallest group amongst the disability groups. And in agencies in other states where VR and Commission for the Blind Services are lumped into one program, a caseworker has to become a real generalist. And that's very difficult when you have a quota to meet of 26s, which is a closed case employment number that they use for tracking. They need to have a certain number per year to show that they're doing their job, and they have, I know that the caseworker in Eugene, who I work with on occasion in other projects, has 100 people on her caseload, and there are waiting lists besides that. So when a VR counselor has cross disability needs to learn about and deal with, plus her quota, she or he generally doesn't get around to the small percentage of blind people. In other states, there are statistics that show that blind people are not 26th out of the programs very often. Blind rehabilitation is costly, and when it's done correctly, then we are able to go out into the community and be productive again. But when it's done incorrectly, it's really a waste of money. And it generally means that we sit on waiting lists for a long, long time and are not able to be rehabbed. And so I know that's why many years ago the Commission for the Blind was separated out from the Voc Rehab Department here, because there are many statistics that show that it is a much more cost-effective way of getting people back to work.
Gwenna, thank you.
Thank you.
Setting us straight on that. Thank you very much. Gilbert and Deb Marinos. Donna, Representative Nelson, thank you. If you can kind of be my escort while you're there.
Honored to. Just these microphones are very strange. You found it, I guess?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Steve, you may go ahead.
I just want to thank you all for giving me a chance to talk. I formerly lived in another state and worked as an aircraft mechanic. And due to my blindness, I lost my career and was forced to go on SSI and other public assistance, and lost a great deal of my independence. I had to relocate to another city to gain my independence due to public transportation issues and other society factors, and also came to the Oregon Commission for the Blind because they had really good services for me to become self-sufficient and independent and to go back to work. And it's helped me a great deal. I am about 99% self-sufficient and independent. In fact, most people that I meet in this state don't even know I'm blind until they see the cane, because I'm so independent and self-sufficient. And I look around at some of my fellow students who are young and just out of high school, and they've never had a chance to be independent, self-sufficient, or have a career. And I think that's very important that as people, they are given that opportunity, and that I'm given that opportunity to go back to the lifestyle that I'm accustomed to, get off SSI, to become a taxpayer, to have a career, and to have some dignity, and just to get on with our lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Deb?
Deb Marinos, for the record. I'm speaking on behalf of both myself and the American Council for the Blind of Oregon to say how much support that the Commission for the Blind does give us. Personally, I was an electrician, electrical contractor for about 20 years. My eyesight 92 became an issue, and I went and got services. They gave me the tools I needed, but the most tool I needed was the network. There wasn't money available then either, and so they gave us the ideas and the forewithal to go and figure out how to figure things out. And so I was able to continue that company 9 more years. All of my employees appreciated that. And then I had another small company, when a training electrician, licensed electrician, and I ran into a roadblock of not having the educational qualifications when you start working for business and for state agencies and such things. You've got to have more than electrical licenses. And so I was encouraged by my vocational counselor to seek degrees, which I did do. I completed 2 degrees in February. And one in education and one in business management. And I'm back to work, and I'm making big money.
Thank you. Will Mustol and Carla McQuinlan. Will?
Well, thank you for listening to me. My name is Will Muster. I'm very new at being blind. Blindness, needless to say, has devastated me, and I found it very difficult to get on with my life. And I would honestly say that the Commission for the Blind has literally saved my life and kept me sane. I don't really need to say much more than that, but everything they do keeps people going, and it's extremely important what they do, and the funding is vital. Thank you.
Carla.
Hi, I'm Carla McQuillan, and I'm from Springfield, Oregon. I am also the president of the National Federation of the Blind of Oregon. Seen many of you over the years, and you'll see us again in another week or so. I have a number of comments that I would like to make. One that I'd like to begin with, I don't know if you're aware, but the Social Security Administration estimates that approximately 74% of all blind people in this country are unemployed. And that is not because blind people can't do the job. It's mostly because of society's attitudes about what blind people can do, and perhaps more importantly, what blind people's attitudes about what they can do themselves. One of the things that the Commission for the Blind provides, probably more importantly than the funding and than all of the other programs, is the ability for blind people to understand that they can learn to believe in themselves. I have been blind since I was 10 years old. I have 2 children. One is now 13 and the other one is a junior in college. And when they were growing up, I could not read, and I was never able to read a bedtime story to my children at night. And I currently am the executive director of Main Street Montessori Association. We operate 2 Montessori schools, in one in Eugene and one in Springfield. And this last year, I was able to, at the support, financial support of the Commission for the Blind, go for some training and learn to read Braille. See this? This is my pencil right here. And I sat throughout this meeting and I made my notes, which are in Braille, that I am now able to read. Now, if this agency has to go to an order of selection, and by the way, when I got my training last year, it was because I had put my name on a list a long time before, and because of my business was waiting for the opportunity to go, I would not have been a priority in the order of selection. But I think when you look at, I'm not going to do this.
Oh, you can go ahead.
I think when you look at the relative quality of life that we are talking about, I am employed. I am an employer. I have 25 employees that I supervise on a daily basis. My confidence in myself and my own ability to do my job better, not to mention being able to read to my children in the classrooms, has increased beyond any sense that any dollar figure could possibly address. The one thing in Linda Mock's discussion that I strongly disagree with is I don't think that the Commission for the Blind should have to dip into donation funds to make up a shortfall from the state budget. I understand that everybody is dealing with very difficult budget cuts. I also would like to point out that not every agency in this state has the ability to receive matching federal dollars the way that the Commission for the Blind does. Now, may I point out, I am not a genius fiscal analyst, but it seems to me that this state at this point in our economy could really benefit from $612,000 coming in from the federal government, much more so than from giving up of our own donation funds, because if that is the pattern, we lose even the possibility for those federal dollars in future years. So I would like the committee to consider not only the matching federal funds and how that is going to make up a lot of the money that will come into the state and boost the economy, but also the comments that Stephanie and Linda made regarding the 8-month time frame that it takes for a blind person who has gone through rehabilitation training from the commission to actually repay all of the money it cost to give them that training by tax dollars. 8 months. And if this wait list grows, it'll be 8 months that people are waiting for services that they could have been ready to walk out into the job market and start paying back into the system. And before I leave, one last comment I'd like to make. I find it interesting that every agency and every person in this state has been asked to make budget cuts, except Department of Administrative Services, who now is increasing by a grossly substantial amount of money to hit on an agency that is, in fact, providing a cost benefit to this society by getting people employed. So we're going to take money away from the services that will bring money back into the state and into the system so that we can pay administrative services. I think there's something very wrong with that picture. Thank you very much, and the National Federation of the Blind will be here on March 31st to talk about this and other issues.
I can understand all of your enthusiasm, but I need to get these hearings completed.
I know, I'm done.
Thank you. And Charlene.
Man, that's a hard act to follow. My name is Charlene Cook, and I am also very honored to be a commissioner on the Oregon Commission for the Blind Board of Directors. And I want to just thank you, State of Oregon, for being there for me when I also lost my vision at age 7, walked in the doors of the Commission for the Blind at age 18, and could not read. And they picked me up from where I was and gave me the training and the courage and the self-reliance to go on. And I, too, am a business owner and have people working for me. But I want to say to you today, consider our budget with grace and with compassion and with courage to say these people are doing it right. And also, I want to thank you for having been there for me, and I know that you want the state of Oregon to be there for the people that you've heard today that are newly blind. And we, as commissioners, deliberated and belabored the very idea of dipping into our precious donation funds so that services to blind Oregonians could go on, and we came up with that, and it was a very tough decision, but we felt it was the only one we could make right now so that people could go on and become the people they want to be. And thank you very much, and we are looking forward to the future. We're looking to serve the Oregonians that come to us as blind people and leave as working blind people. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's the last of our public testimony. I do want to actually two things to say thank you to the commission for all their hard work that they've done, and it really shows in your budget presentation. And I couldn't leave here without saying, because last session, I'm probably one of the rare individuals in this building who, although I moved from the House to the Senate, still ended up with the budget. Normally that does not happen. It's only happened one other time in the history of Oregon that the person who was in the House and went to the Senate still had the budget. And our last session, we talked a lot about performance measures, and we talked a lot about prioritizing services. And I just want to thank the commission because you did come back and heard the message that we had. I also want to thank those of you who came publicly to testify. Your courage and your pride and dignity has said a lot to this panel. And I know for the members of this panel, we heard your voices, we heard your sincerity, and I think I can speak for the members here that we support your efforts. Very pleased that you have not given up. And that you know that there is a tomorrow. And the young lady in the front, we would like to know your name.
Rochelle,
welcome and come back and visit us again. And with Senator Morris.
Before we adjourn, just as a point of clarification, I know that the DOS budget does not come before this committee, but I think
it does on my other committee.
It does on your other committee? Okay. Well, maybe you can
she will
help us, because it's eventually going to come to the full committee, and we'll all be there. But it would be, I think, helpful for us to understand what the internal transfer policies are with respect to charges for building rent and what the DOS is wanting to accomplish. If you have a building that is essentially paid for and you're charging in excess of $16 a square foot, that's a exceedingly high rent.
And we will delve into this thoroughly, what I was hearing Jeremy saying, that there had been a delay in even collecting full rent, and somehow now it's just, they say that the payment has come due. The problem with that particular process is particularly it's very... when you don't have resources and you're being asked to cut back on resources, and then suddenly you're getting this huge payment that says, you know, oops, we didn't charge you previous year, so now we're going to collect the arrearage and everything, and I think that's the issue. But we will have some conversation with DAS on that one, also on some of the fairness issues respecting the agency. So I expect that Mr. Olson will be in conversation very quickly with DAS on the issues that we have raised here at this committee. And certainly when they come before general government, I will talk to them about it.
Thank you.
So with that, we are adjourned. And again, thank you.